Vayera Elav Adonai Be'elone Mamre Vihu Yoshev Pesach Ohel Kechom Hayom. And he, God, appeared to him, Avraham, in the plains of Mamre, and Avraham was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. OU Israel presents Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayera. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 13th day of Mar Cheshvan, 5778, corresponding this year to November 2nd, which happens to be the centennial 100th anniversary of the Balfour Declaration. And I love reading the Arab propaganda on it, including their demand that Britain apologize to the, quote, Palestinians for the Balfour Declaration and even compensate them. And the whole thing is just a sham and a scam. The Balfour Declaration was one of the things that paved the way for the Jewish state of Israel. And for whatever that means, we owe it to salute Balfour and the British government for issuing that declaration. Enough on that. Let's say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. And then we'll take care of some business. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai mia'amod ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki visi Adonai kivasa nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara v'ashivya, ho'omedim v'bein bayam u'bein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziem mitzara l'irvacha, ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. There are two types of listeners to Torah Tibbetz Audio. Those who listen without going to the Israel Center, OU Israel Center website, the Torah Tibbetz website, and those who look there. Those who look there might have seen why there was no show last week. I was in the hospital, I had an operation. I came out this past Sunday. Baruch Hashem, I'm doing okay. And recovering as we speak. And I thank those from whatever source they found out for their best wishes, for their prayers, for my health, for phone calls, personal comments, emails, WhatsApps and SMSs. Thank you all. And especially who think that I talk to them sometimes directly, but this time I am. My Baltimore friends for their concern and their phone call. All right, let's take a look at the beginning of the Sedra Vayera. Before that, a general statement. And I've made this many times in different contexts. There are 613 mitzvot in the Torah, They are not evenly distributed. They are not the sole purpose of the Torah. The Torah is not just a book of mitzvot. It has many, many kinds of lessons in personal traits and other lessons from our patriarchs and matriarchs, etc. And what demonstrates that is the fact that 17 out of 54 sedras, that's almost one-third of all of the sedras, have no mitzvot among the 613. Yet they are there, and they are important, and we learn many things from them nonetheless. A good example is this week's Parsha of Vayera, which has no mitzvot of 613. Back in Bereshit, we had one mitzvah to be fruitful and multiply. Noah had none of the 613. Last week's Lech Lecha had the one mitzvah of Brit Milah, circumcision. The next Sedra will be Vayishlach, with the first and only prohibition in the book of Bereshit, the book of Genesis, and that is the prohibition of eating the Gid HaNasheh. We'll talk about that when we get there. And that means Vayera this week, Chayasara Toldot Vayetze, is four sedras in a row coming up that have no mitzvot, but many, many lessons. As I said, case in point, Vayera Elav Hashem. So the commentaries point out the obvious. Usually when God appears to one of the patriarchs, it says that God appeared to, and it names the person, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, as the case may be. Here, it says, Vayera Elav, him, pronoun. Pronouns have antecedents, and we just go back to the very end of Lech Lecha last week, and we find that obviously it is Avraham Avinu that God is appearing to. Obviously, it is very soon after his circumcision. Our Midrashic sources and commentaries point out that it was on the third day of Avraham's advanced aged circumcision when he would be in the most pain, and God was paying a Bikur Cholim, a visiting the sick mitzvah, teaching us that that's what one should do when someone is ailing in the hospital, convalescing at home. You arrange to make a short visit. Commentaries further point out, how do we know that's why God came? Because it doesn't say anything that God spoke to Avraham. Usually we'd say, and God appeared to Moshe, let's say, and said to him, etc., etc. Here, it's God appeared to him without a message at the moment, and there is an assumption that it was for the purpose of Bikur Cholim, to teach us that one of the Jewish traits is to be concerned about visiting the sick. Furthermore, and to me this is a lesson within a lesson that is very, very important, and I say it from recent personal experience, as well as in the past and having spoken to people, the commentaries explain the purpose of the phrase kechom hayom, in the heat of the day. And they explain it as such. God knew very well, so to speak, that Avraham Avinu was extremely hospitable, and he spent a lot of time outside his tent, facing the road, hoping that bypassers would come, and he would be able to invite them in for a meal and a schmooze, and thereby also being nice to wayfarers, and also spreading the word about belief in one God to anyone that was around to listen. So the sources tell us that God removed the sun from its casing, meaning he made the day exceedingly hot, that there should not be wayfarers on the road, so that Avraham would not be visited. and therefore be able to rest. Now, Avraham was not that kind of guy. Avraham passionately welcomed visitors, and he was upset that he had nobody to entertain. So the next step in the next verse is that Avraham raises his eyes and he sees three men approaching. They were the angels that came to visit him, but they came in the guise of people so that Avraham would be able to react in the way that he usually reacted, inviting them in, preparing meal for them, and would thereby convalesce. Now, you might ask, full bed rest is probably the smartest thing to do if you're ailing. Put your feet up, lie back, and relax. The answer is, that's not for everybody. There are some people that handle that well, and there are other people who by nature need to be busy in their chosen field or in their holy work, as Avraham did. And you're not doing them a favor by holding back. Person today could be in the hospital. Some people like to be pampered. Let me fluff up your pillow. Let me get you some water to drink. Let me adjust the Venetian blinds in your room. And that can be welcomed by some people, and it could drive other people up a wall. I could do it myself. I don't need help. I don't know how to say that to the other person. But thanks and no thanks. And the whole point that I'm making is that the visitor of the sick, as well as the comforter of a mourner, needs to think and think again and think again, not what he would like to do for the object of his visit, but what that person would best appreciate. A short visit, a longer visit, playing a game, a distraction, a conversation. It's not easy. You don't know what fits. I recently spoke to a mourner who had lost a brother, and one of the comforters said, "My elderly mother just passed away at age 96, and I know exactly how you feel." The response was, in the person's head, didn't say it out loud, "No, you don't know exactly how I feel. You lost a mother who lived to 96. I lost a brother younger than me." And there's a total difference. And when people visit you in the hospital, for them to tell you about their operations and their pains and their this, I don't think anybody wants to hear that in that setting. I'd rather hear a joke. I'd even more rather hear a nice Devar Torah. So one has to be sensitive, and I believe it's a lesson we learn from God. God heated up the day so no one would bother Avraham, saw that that's not what Avraham needed. And he brought three people, angels, but looking like people, and Avraham, so to speak, must have perked up. So that's a first lesson, or first bunch of lessons that we get. The angels were three, and as commentaries point out, Rashi among them, Ein malach echad oseh shtei shluchuyot. One angel does not undertake two different tasks. And since there were three tasks, there were three angels that God sent to visit Avraham. One was to expedite his healing from his recent circumcision. One was to announce the impending pregnancy of Sarah and the subsequent birth of Yitzchak, and one was to continue the journey to Sodom to destroy Sodom. Now, when the angels were finished with their jobs, two of them went on to Sodom. One, who was originally sent to destroy Sodom, and one who was one of the two angels that had visited Avraham and had fulfilled their mission, now took on a new task to save Lot and his family. So the question, which I originally heard as a Dvar Torah, maybe 36 years ago when I first came, I heard it at a Malava Malka at the home of the Slaters, Paul Shifra Slater, where Paul gave a Dvar Torah, which I later found in Mayona Shel Torah, Wellsprings of Torah, quoting the Chidushei Harim, which was the first, I think, Gera Rebbe. And I fell in love with that Dvar Torah. It actually was one of the first, maybe I have to say the first Torah tidbit back in Vayera time, before we started publishing weekly, a couple of months before. And we had then just gotten to the point of printing up a one-page Dvar Torah and leaving it on the shelf at 10 Strauss for people to take along with flyers about activities. And so I always refer to it as really the first Torah tidbit. The Chidushei Harim asks, basically, whichever way you want to look at it, if there were four tasks: to heal Avraham, to announce the birth of Yitzhak, to destroy Sodom, and to save Lot. So send four angels. Or, if two angels already fulfilled their task in the visit to Avraham, send those two further to Sodom to destroy Sodom and save Lot. So part of the answer there is that destructive angels have their kind of tasks, but they don't switch their type of job description, so to speak, from healing and announcing good tidings to destroying Sodom. The angel that destroyed Sodom was sent for that purpose. Okay, what about saving Lot? And why not send one for that purpose? The answer there he gives is that Lot's being saved was a question mark when the angels came to Avraham. In other words, God sent three angels, one to heal Avraham, one to announce the birth of Yitzhak, and one to destroy Sodom. At the visit at Avraham's tent, a new task was created on the spot, and that was to save Lot. And therefore, an angel on the spot who had done his job was now sent with the destroying angel, to Sodom. And the question then is dealt with: what happened to give Lot the merit to be saved? And the answer is, when the angels asked Avraham where Sarah was, he answered, "She's in the tent." The position of the woman in that society, and in many societies till today, was one of being in the background, not being the one to go out to, in this case, welcome visitors, but the one to stay behind, take care of things until it would be appropriate for her to join. That innate modesty of Sarah Imenu was a hallmark not only for the Jewish people of the future, but for the nations of the world. It does not mean that every society follows that, but it means that by and large, the women are more in the background in a situation of confronting somebody. And that allowed a future Sanhedrin to argue the case that Rut, the Moabite woman, was able to marry Boaz. Because the Torah says, Lo yavo amoni u'moavi b'kahal Hashem, a Moabite and an Ammonite cannot marry into the mainstream of Judaism. And that is based on the verses that say, because they were not hospitable when they encountered Israel's approach to their territory, and that they hired Bilaam to curse the Jewish people. That was a role taken by the men of Moab. The women, in the style and pattern of Sarah Imenu, were not the ones who confronted and refused to be hospitable. And therefore, the Sanhedrin was able to analyze the verse and say it is a Moabite man who may not enter into the Kahal Hashem, but a woman may. That gave permission for Boaz and Ruth to marry, and they are the progenitors of King David and Solomon and the entire Davidic line all the way through to the Mashiach. That gave a weird kind of merit to Lot, who was the unwitting father of Moab, from which Rut came, and therefore he became worthy of being saved. Not only because he was Avraham's nephew, apparently that wouldn't be enough, and not because he was marginally better than the people of Sodom among whom he lived, but because he had the solid zechut, merit, of the future Rut HaMoaviyah, Ima Shel Malchut, mother of royalty, the progenitor of the entire Davidic line. I hope you like that. I've always liked it. I've used it from time to time. Did not use it this week in the hard copy, but I obviously have just used it on Torah Tidbits audio, and I think it gives us food for thought, partial pun intended. There are a few additional lessons that we learn from the whole episode of Avraham and the angels visiting him. And I don't know if we have to go into every single one, but one was definitely emphasizing the importance of the particular act of chesed, of being hospitable, versus an involvement that he had at the moment with God. In other words, the pasuk, the verse that sort of jumps at you, even though there are different ways of understanding it, is, and Avraham saw the angels, the what he thought were men, ran after them and said to God, Imna matzati chein beinecha, al no tavor me'al avdecha. Please wait until I get back after doing this. So that's a very bold kind of thing based on the relationship that Avraham had with God. We can understand it. Doesn't mean we emulate that, but the concept of Gemilut Chasadim, acts of kindness, of which one is hospitality, of which is, I mentioned earlier, comforting mourners, and many, many other acts of chesed, that we need to prioritize, or at least indicate their significance. I sort of just listened to that again, and I don't like the way it came out. Let's just put it plain and simple. Torah learning is one of the top occupations of a Jew. And he could think that it is more important than anything else. So, as a halachic question, if I am dedicated to full-time Torah learning, do I take time away from my Torah learning to do acts of kindness, which maybe other people could do also? Do I visit the sick? Do I comfort the mourning? Do I attend a funeral? Or is it more important that I maintain my dedication and commitment time-wise to Torah learning. That's putting it in a very obvious kind of way, but the answer is that we learn from here that a Jew needs to involve himself with acts of kindness, not as a second-class activity, but as a high priority towards rounding out the Torah personality of the individual. If we say in Pirkei Avot that the world stands on three pillars, Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim, that means that study of Torah doesn't do it all. It needs to show that it translates into action when action is called upon. So let's leave it at that. So that's another lesson. And then we have the business of Emor Ma'at Vaseh Harbeh, speak little and do a lot. And that's because Avraham offered water and bread to his guests and ended up preparing one of the most sumptuous meals you could imagine, to the point where the Gemara says it was per person more sumptuous than the fantastic feast that Shlomo HaMelech prepared for the dedication of the building of the Beit HaMikdash. I always got a kick out of the details that the commentaries go to, that at the time, the tastiest of dishes, the one that showed guests that you cared about them more than anything else, was beef tongue in mustard sauce. Where exactly that comes from, I don't know, but that's what the Gemara says. In any event, after this episode, we follow the angels to their next destination, which is Sodom. And on the way, by the way, I should point out that we have the psukim, or one of the psukim, that attributes the establishment of davening in the morning, which is our shacharit, to Avraham Avinu. And, in fact, a nice corollary to that is that when Avraham previously, swore that he would not take the spoils of war when he was victorious in saving Lot, not michut va'ad sroch na'ar, not a thread or a shoe strap. Commentaries point out that the mitzvah of a thread is tzitzit, and the mitzvah of a leather strap is tefillin. And the mitzvot of talis and tefillin today are traditionally worn during shacharit, which is attributed to Avraham Avinu. So that sort of ties in nicely. Anyway, then the angels go on to Sodom, and they encounter the wickedness of the people of Sodom, and they finally save Lot and two daughters. The wife looked back against instructions and was turned into a pillar of salt, of which if you drive through the Dead Sea area on the way to past Ein Gedi, you will find many, many pillars of salt, which are called Lot's wife. I don't know if any of them are, actually, but the symbolic idea of being punished and taken out of the equation as a pillar of salt, the commentaries explain that she, the wife, was not hospitable, and one of the demonstrations is withholding salt for enhancing the taste of the food that you serve to guests. Okay, and then we continue on, and we have the birth of Yitzchak and the circumcision of Yitzchak and the business of Sarah seeing that Yishmael, older brother, so to speak, of Yitzchak, was a bad influence on him, a potential a negative influence, and she insisted that Avraham expel Hagar and Ishmael. He was reluctant to do that until God said to listen to Sarah, from which we have indications that she was on a higher level of prophecy than even Avraham, or that Avraham was blinded by his overwhelming feature of chesed as to how could I do this to my son. Interesting that the next generation, Yitzchak, was literally blinded, but also figuratively blinded to things that Esav did, and it was Rivka who had the presence of mind to do something about it when Yitzchak didn't. And that was to the benefit of the future nation of Israel. And a generation later, Rachel and Leah seem also to be more on the ball as to what needed to be done than their husband Yaakov Avinu. And this pattern continues, where we have significant contributions to the developing nation of Israel from Asenat, Yosef's wife, from Miriam, from Yocheved, her mother, Moshe's mother, from Bat Paro, from Tzipporah, Moshe's wife. We'll talk about that later some other time. But there's a definite pattern that the women involved were more clued in and more oriented towards accomplishing the goal of forming the foundation of the people of Israel, more so necessarily than their husbands. So that's something else. Now, the ultimate portion of the parsha is known as Akedat Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac, where God calls upon Avraham and presents him with his final test, at least according to most who list the tests, the final test of faith, where God tells him, take your son, your only son, your beloved son, your Yitzchak, v'lech lecha el eretz ha-Moria, and go to the land of Moria, which our tradition tells us was Yerushalayim area, v'aleu sham li'ola, and offer him there as a burnt offering, al echad he'harim asher omari lecha, on one of the hilltops which I will indicate. Now that word, v'lech lecha, definitely brings us back to the beginning of last week's Sedra, to what, according to most mitzvah, most counters in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avot, of the tests of Avraham count as his first test, which was with the same words, lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetecha u'mibeit avicha, and go to a land which I will show you. That is paralleled to go to Eretz HaMoriah, to a hilltop, which I will indicate. Very reminiscent one of the other. And I heard a long time ago from Rabbi Zev Leff, which I wrote about this week as well, a very clear indication that the Lech Lecha to Avraham, as well as the Lech Lecha to every Jew today living outside of Israel, the command by God, the recommendation by God, pick yourself up and leave the luxury of your hometown, the comfort of your hometown, of your birthplace, of your parents' home, and go to live in the land of Israel. But just like with Avraham, it was by no means the final test after which we can say, and he lived happily ever after. Some people do, but most people don't yet. The happily ever after is still the elusive goal of the future. But the original Lech Lecha in each individual case of ours today is followed up by V'lech Lecha El Eretz HaMoriah, and that is to take the challenge, not only of physically moving to Israel, but of developing spirituality of a higher level than capable anywhere else in the world, a higher level of Torah learning, a higher level of mitzvah observance, which is the natural course of events here in Israel, and undertake sometimes an ultimate challenge. Now, the challenge that we have is never going to be like Avraham's, sacrifice your child. But there are many difficult challenges that involve a certain amount of sacrifice or self-sacrifice or things that actually involve children and family. We're not going to give examples, but the idea of v'lech lecha should always keep in mind that after a challenge comes another challenge and another challenge and another challenge. And even though God said to Avraham in the aftermath of the Akedah, now I finally know that you truly are a believer, implying that I'm not going to test you anymore, there's still tests, the death of Sarah, next week, Sedra, the search and quest for a burial place for Sarah, the challenge of marrying off Yitzchak, the getting back to normal civilian life with his remarriage to Keturah and the fathering of other children. So it just keeps going. I often think in terms of Holocaust survivors who certainly underwent challenge to their faith in spades during the Shoah, and they survived, and they sometimes have nice, comfortable lives, which is definitely something they deserve after what they've been through. And sometimes the challenges continue. Now, we don't know and can't fully comprehend or even scratch the surface much as to how God determines who is going to be further challenged and who is going to finally find a little peace and tranquility in this world, but we need to keep that open in mind. In fact, the Sedra ends with telling us that Avraham heard about the births of Milcah to Nahor, Avraham's brother, and it mentions there 8 children from Milcah and 4 from a Pelegesh Reuma, including Betuel, who was the father of Rivka. And the main purpose of telling us this is to introduce Rivka to the spot, because the next step is the transition from Avraham and Sarah to the next generation, which is Yitzchak and Rivka. But it also happens to tell us that here is Avraham's brother. He wasn't thrown into a fiery furnace. He wasn't challenged to go and move to a land that he didn't know. He was not challenged with a famine here and another famine there, and having his wife taken to the palace of the king in this place and in that place, and making a deal here and all kind of other things, and a son who he had to kick out. All of those things, here you have what looks like a description of, and by the way, Avraham, you're having a lot of trouble in your life and a lot of trials and tribulations. You should know that your brother Nahor married a lovely girl, Milcah, and they had 8 kids, and then he took on a concubine, and he had another 4 children, and one of those is the father of Rivka, and she's the one specially designated for Yitzchak to become one of the mothers of Israel. So it's complex. I'd like to now play the song Moria. This comes from an album by Hask, one of their concerts. And actually the song is sung by what they call the 4 tenors, Avram Fried and 3 others. And we'll talk more after the song. It's a nice moving song. Enjoy it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Avram Fried, Yitzhak Meir Helfgott, Dudu Fischer, and Ohad on stage for the first time as the Four Tenors.
We lama, lama, ma, mikra moria, al shem amor atom, al shem amor atom, sheyesh lo sham. We lama, lama, ma, oy mikra moria, al shem.
Let me wrap up with an idea. Even though I've been talking about lessons from the Sedra, let's take as an example from the beginning, Hachnosat Orchim. One level is to say, here is a story of Avraham Avinu, advanced age, ailing from the recent circumcision, yet energetically involving his wife and child at the time, Yishmael, in the process of true hospitality. That's a lesson for us, but it's more. It is not only a lesson on how to behave, it becomes or is a definition of what it means to be Jewish. It's not that Jews are hospitable. It's a Jew is by nature hospitable. It's part of our identity. It's part of our spiritual genetic makeup. Taking on the challenge of the Akedah, not the same challenge, but recognizing from the story that, like Avram Avinu was further tested, we need to be ready to sacrifice and to be tested and to come up smelling like roses from the test and not fail and maintain our belief in God and our love of God, like Avram Avinu. That is not just a lesson. That is a definition of who we are. We are the descendants of Avraham, biologically, genetically, and spiritually. And our personalities as Jews have inborn characteristics that we can call upon to say, don't judge me by my own personal behavior. Look at who I am. I am an offspring of Avraham and Sarah Imenu, of Yitzchak and Rivka, of Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah. It's more than lessons to learn. It's a making one consciously aware of what it is to be a Jewish person, to be a Torah person, to be a God-fearing person. And on that note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom, L'Hishtameah.